The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lotte Hurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Imagine an apocalyptic world where humans live on a terrifying planet filled with killer monsters. And to protect themselves, they live in safe and culturally themed bubbles. To make ends meet, most people are forced to work nonstop in the gig economy, which for some includes killing monsters. And in one bubble, the coolest DJ in town is a guy whose claim to fame is that he used to play in the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. This is the premise of Jordan Morris's podcast-turned-graphic novel, Bubble. Actually, that Bosstones bit was just an Easter egg, but it's one that makes a lot of sense, given that Jordan is a lifelong ska fan. We wanted to talk to him about Bubble, as well as hear his own personal ska story and how the music recently gave him a lot of comfort during the pandemic.
Before this interview, I gotta be honest, I didn't know who Jordan was.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, but I really enjoy the Bubble podcast. I enjoy the graphic novel. I bought a copy.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, I think it's really good.
Yeah. You know, and he is kind of a legendary podcaster too. He's been doing it since, I want to say, mid 2000s.
Wow. That's a while. When are we going to be legendary?
I think maybe by year two, we'll be legendary. Yeah.
I can't wait. I really can't wait to be a podcast legend along with Jordan.
But it's great to find out just, you know, your average podcast legend is a ska fan.
Yeah, I think there's more of them out there than we realized when we started this.
Yeah. I mean, he came up in that sort of Orange County ska scene that a lot of kids were in. But he also came in kind of through that Christian ska portal, which I didn't realize at the time what a major portal that was for people getting into ska. Because of Five Iron Frenzy and some of those other bands, it really brought a lot of people to ska.
Yeah, I mean, I was not aware of the Christian ska scene until way later.
If it brings people to ska, then all the better.
So Jordan, you have this graphic novel out called Bubble, which is based off of a podcast that you made a few years ago, right?
Yes, that is all true.
I noticed there was Bosstones referenced twice.
Yeah, you got it.
There's a mention of a character who had been in Bosstones for 6 months and wouldn't shut up about it. And then later in the book, I guess he scores a DJ gig based off of those credits.
Yeah, I'll run down the joke a little bit. It's a kind of a self-effacing ska joke, but please know that the author is a ska fan from way back, and it was not meant to be. It was not meant to be a kick in the face to any ska fans. A loving noogie. Yeah, so there's a character named Annie. Bubble, I guess I should say. I'll just say what the plot of the dang thing is real quick.
Let's let people know what Bubble's about, because it's a really interesting story. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but yeah, give people a real general sense of what it is.
Yeah, it's a sci-fi comedy. It's kind of set in the near future where you know, humanity has to live on this, you know, strange planet inside these bubble cities because there's all these, you know, carnivorous monsters outside. And, you know, people can live in a suburban bubble or a hipster bubble, which is kind of like where most of the action of Bubble takes place. And our characters are kind of tied to this kind of life and death gig economy, kind of Hunger Games style, where they have to slay monsters in order to make their rent. And one of our characters, Annie, is a real classic kind of like brilliant underachiever. She is someone who is like this science genius, but really just wants to like get fucked up and eat nachos. And some of the characters are giving her shit because of all the kind of shitty relationship choices she makes. And while they're rattling off kind of lame people that she's dated, someone says, "Do you remember that guy you dated who wouldn't shut up about the 6 months he spent in the Mighty Mighty Boston?" And yeah, a little later in the book, there's a callback to that. There's a tiny little text callback to that. I guess it's all text because it's a book, but you can see that that guy has gotten a pretty sweet DJ gig. So, and that's how what he goes by. He goes by guy who spent 6 months in the Mighty Mighty Boston.
So is that it? Did I miss any other ska in jokes?
You know, and this is we can debate this a little bit. But there is a one of the characters loves 311, and during a scene in which he hallucinates on an alien drug, he conjures up a vision of P-Nut, the bass player of 311. And I think that some people would kind of lump them in with 90s third wave ska revival. They were not a part of my 90s ska third wave revival, but some people might.
I would loop them in more with the whole nu metal thing.
Yeah, me too. I consider them a little more Limp Bizkit than I do Real Big Fish.
They did play with Skank and Pickle, though. I think Aaron wrote about it in his book.
They tried to kick Skank and Pickle off the bill because their roadie was making fun of them. And so they had to agree that the roadie would not be allowed within a square block of the venue.
Wow.
And then they could play the, yeah. This was like right as they were starting to get some radio plays. So they were like, this was at First Avenue in Minneapolis, which is Prince's Club.
Okay.
So this is a club that holds about maybe 1,500 people. And the headliner was No Doubt, who was just starting to take off. And then 311 were the main support. They were a little bit of radio going on. And the Skank and Pickle was the opening band. So, yeah.
And they were already swinging their dicks, huh?
Yeah. My favorite part about that story is one of the members of 311 went up to somebody in Skank and Pickle and said, "What do you say?" Something like, "Hey, man, what's with the harsh vibes?"
No, no. He says, "What's with the neg vibes?
What's with the neg vibes?" Love it.
So chill. I love, too, making sure the roadie can only be a certain distance away from the, like, just say he can't work the show. Like, what is he going to do from a block and a half away? I guess he could move some equipment to there, and then someone else could, like, pick it up from him, like, relay style, but...
He's got, like, you could plant little shenanigans that get, like, carried off by someone else to...
Yeah. And I guess maybe, like, from a block away, he could, like, maybe hear some of 311's beautiful set, but they don't even want him to be close enough to even hear it from the outside.
I like that idea.
We don't want you close enough to even hear a muffled version of Come Original.
And so Peanut in particular has a lot of reference in this comic. Even I would say a little bit more than 311 even. It was more like there's talk about 311 and then it goes hard into Peanut.
So. Yeah, so one of the characters, Mitch, so he lives in this hipster bubble, but at heart, he is a very basic man. I think he just wants to, like, eat at chain restaurants, and I think his ultimate dream is to drive a party bus. So we wanted to, like, do some jokes for Mitch where he has this kind of pedestrian music taste that the hipsters would consider lame. And so we kind of leaned hard into him liking stuff that I think we considered to be, like, kind of basic, like, college guy stuff, like Dave Matthews and John Mayer and 311. And when the time came for him to have this hallucination, we're like, oh, who would he hallucinate? Like, who is in his brain? And I just had this remembrance that the basis of 311's name was P-Nut. And I'm like, that's too funny not to include. Yeah. I guess that guy's like his, you know, his vision, the vision he sees when he, you know, goes on his vision quest is P-Nut, bass player from 311. So anyway.
Do we know if P-Nut is read your comic or listened to the podcast?
So Great question. Amazing question. So our artist on this, Tony Cliff, I should say that I did not make the whole comic. I co-wrote it with a great comedy writer named Sarah Morgan from the UK. And it is drawn by Tony Cliff, who does the Delilah Dirk series of books. That's the artist, and the colors are by Reese, who does the Dungeon Critter series. So Tony just did a beautiful version of Peanut, who looks he looks great. He's in like a black tank top, looking really handsome, great looking goatee. And someone posted on Twitter a photo of that page and tagged him in it. And I, you know, said back on Twitter, I think he's just at Peanut on Twitter. Hey, at Peanut, if you, you know, would love to send you a copy of the book. And he starred the tweet, but he didn't send me his information. So he's seen it at least, or just has like a social media person who stars every tweet he's mentioned in. I don't know. I don't know if Peanut's doing social media, but I think Peanut has seen it. But he has not requested a copy of the book. But I got one for him. I got one set aside. So,
I'd like to point out that the hipsters in your world are listening to a guy who was in Mighty Mighty Boston's DJ. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool. I guess I didn't really think about the logic of that. Like, oh, if they like think 311's lame, wouldn't they also think this is lame? Anyway, you found a plot hole.
But so the hipsters, though, there's some characters in there that are like podcasters and hipsters and whatever. And you like deliberately make them annoying. And one of their annoying lines that you give them is that they want to have a discussion about the legitimacy of rap rock.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice dig at rap rock, which, by the way, horrible. I hate rap rock.
Yeah, same. And I think that definitely, you know, if you were a ska kid in the 90s, you know, rap rock coming along a few years later was just, you know, an affront to everything you believed in. It was the antithesis of everything you were about. And it pushed all, you know, it kind of pushed ska out of the mainstream. Although, you know, I don't know if, like, you could debate whether or not we liked it being in the mainstream, but you know, it kind of like became the new sound of like modern rock radio. Anyway, so there's these characters who are these like hot take pop culture guys, just like the guys who love to argue in a bar, you know, about pop culture, and they think their takes are the best. I can't imagine either of you are familiar with this type of man.
Never heard of them.
I assure you they exist.
Okay.
And they turn into this horrible, they get mutated and they turn into this horrible monster made of beards. And when they become this beard monster, they have these like bad takes. And one of the bad takes is it's time to revisit rap rock. And, you know, it's interesting because I think when we wrote that line, we were even kind of considering that like ska was maybe having another moment. People say fourth wave. I don't know if that's true, but you know, people say it's like coming back, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what else could come back. And like, I think we kind of envisioned a hellscape where people try and rehab rap rock and, you know, Limp Bizkit and Kid Rock and all those kind of bad acts. And I don't know, it might happen. Do you think hipsters who like to have a hot take could formulate a, you know, Korn was actually really good. Could it happen?
Oh, that's fully happening right now.
Is it? Tell me more.
Yeah, when Limp Bizkit did the which festival was that they just did like a month ago?
Was it Lollapalooza?
Yeah. The Lollapalooza, everyone was talking about Fred Durst because he changed his look.
He has a new grandpa look. He like made his hair all gray and he's wearing like Mr. Rogers clothes.
And so there was so many think pieces, like basically do exactly what you're talking about. Like trying to make it seem smart to pretend that Limp Bizkit were ever good and that there was something relevant about their, I don't know.
Ooh. I don't know.
You know, their energy, something about their energy.
And I would even say that it's partly, I would say it's even partly the fault of like ska kind of having a moment, because I feel like new ska bands reinvigorating the scene in a way has gotten this people thinking about like, you know, ska revival and revisiting this stuff. And so people see people revisiting ska music and they're like, oh, well, we should revisit, you know, nu metal also. It's like, no, we should.
Yeah. And I think that like ska had so many haters. I don't need to tell either of you that. Like it just did. And it became this bad word and it became this punchline, I feel like. And I think that, like, I don't know, I think it just holds up to reevaluation so much better. It's like, hey, this was fun. There was good songwriters. There was good musicians. Like, these guys stood for some pretty cool things. Like, I don't know. I don't know. That just seems like an impossible thing to do with, you know, you can take this cookie and stick it up your yeah, stick it up your yeah, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm the elitist here, but...
I mean, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit and say, like, bands like the Deftones, like, have a place. I even really enjoy Slipknot, which got lumped into the whole nu metal thing. But I'd say they fit almost more in, like, a grind or a thrash category. They just happen to wear ridiculous costumes and play festivals. But I like Masks. So.
I like a System of a Down, and I think they maybe would be, like, lumped in with those lesser band anyway. So yeah, so you know, we could all
people are allowed to like what they want to like.
That's true,
unless it's Limp Bizkit.
Yeah. With a few, I'd say maybe Limp Bizkit and Kid Rock are the things I would not hear a reevaluation of.
Oh, Kid, I think Limp Bizkit gets more of a pass than Kid Rock for sure.
Yeah I guess they've been like less publicly abhorrent. I don't know, maybe they have, but yeah, I guess I consider Kid Rock kind of a bad take machine and a you know, on the wrong side of history about stuff.
The premise of Bubble is it falls into the category of post-apocalyptic fiction, where it's like also commenting on, you know, part of what's happening right now. And in your case, it's like the gig economy and how people who have to live in the gig economy are just kind of desperate and is just surviving, and how it's not promising, it's not delivering on the freedoms that it like is advertised as. But it's set in this like, you know, sci-fi world where there's monsters and stuff. I thought you did that well, like, cause I feel like it's a delicate balance to be so overtly commenting on something that's current. And in this case, it's gig economy, and then to set it in a future society that's apocalyptic. Because when I read it, I actually felt kind of, it's funny. There's funny stuff happening, but kind of made me feel unsettled. Like, gave me a knot in my stomach a lot of the times. It's just like the tone of the world is so like so uncomfortable. So I think in that sense, I think you really pulled it off, because it just. Were you hoping for people to feel kind of uncomfortable the whole time a little bit with the concept?
Yeah, I mean, I the idea came. I was visiting this friend of mine in Brooklyn, who lived in like the coolest part of like Coolsburg, Brooklyn. You know, with like the cocktails and the guys with the mustaches riding the old timey bikes. I mean, just everything you think of. Think of like current gentrified Brooklyn. And, you know, and she was like working really hard. She like had 3 gig economy jobs, but still lived in a, you know, in a walk-in closet in an apartment with 5 other people. I mean, she was the only one in the walk-in closet. She wasn't there with 5 other people, but there were 5 people in the apartment. She was in the closet, like, but just had this attitude like, isn't it great? Isn't this amazing? And she lived above, and this apartment with 5 people in it was above a nightclub that was like literally raging till 4 in the morning. And like, I'm like, oh, is it always like this? Is it always like this? Because, you know, we were in there just, and it was, you could just hear this boosh, boosh, boosh from downstairs. And she was just like, no, it's not always like this. Just Wednesday through Sunday. And I think we all have this weird Stockholm syndrome with cool cities, where it's like we just grind and we, you know, and we have these lame apartments and we don't have health insurance, and but we're just so excited because there's, you know, coffee and bands and you know, indie bookstores and pop-ups. And like I like all that stuff. I'm not saying like it's, I live in Pasadena now, but like, which is basically LA, but I lived in like West Hollywood for years and years where like all that stuff was around and I enjoyed all of it. So yeah, I don't know. It just kind of struck me as a weird little thing going on now where we all like, you know, yeah, tie ourselves to these, you know, kind of abusive companies who don't give us health insurance, but, you know, make us risk our lives. And you know, Bubble was a little unfortunately predictive in that, like, you know, during COVID stuff, like gig economy workers did and do have to risk their lives, you know, to like fucking deliver Postmates, you know, you had to brave this pandemic wasteland. So yeah, it you know, I think it was kind of like, you know, we wrote it before anything pandemic-y ever happened, but I mean, I could see reading it now and kind of feeling like, oh yeah, this is about gig economy workers who have to like deliver Postmates, you know, through a wasteland. But yeah, but I think the kind of the groundwork for that world that we are making was kind of there already. So
I usually can't do fictionalized podcasts. But the thing that I found with Bubble, whoever you got to do the acting they do a really good job. And also just having the narration in there really helps. I feel like other maybe some of these other fiction podcasts could take some notes from that. And then the other thing that I really love is the times when you reference songs in the podcast. You had somebody just make new versions of the songs because you can't afford the licensing. Who made the songs?
Yeah, I'll tell you all about that. So you know, I think we wanted to make fun a little bit of. So this is something that is in the podcast and not the graphic novel. But
in the graphic novel, you just can use the actual songs because there's no licensing.
Right. Yeah. You can just have a character sing a few lines of it. So I think we kind of wanted to joke a little bit about, you know, the prevalence in kind of genre stuff of like the needle drops, you know, how like every Marvel movie or DC movie just has like 10 needle drops. So I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if this, like, if we could maybe work needle drops into this somehow? But then I'm like, well, but we can't pay for them. So the workaround was to have Jonathan Coulton, singer-songwriter Jonathan Coulton, he of Code Monkey fame. That's his kind of, like, viral internet song. He's done a ton of cool stuff since then. It's still going. He co-host an NPR game show, the name of which I'm forgetting. Ask Me Another. Yes, that's it. I think. Anyway, Jonathan Coulton, great guy. Look him up. So he's just kind of a pal of ours from podcasting, a pal of the Max Fun Network, where you can find the whole podcast. And we just kind of said, like, hey, this is what we want to do. We want to write, like, recognizable, but, like, barely legal enough covers for all these songs. And he did a great job. He's got a home studio and is just kind of a musical genius and a fun guy. And I kind of did a first pass of the lyrics and then he kind of put a little sheen on them himself. And they're really great. There's a live episode up where he does a barely recognizable cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, but it's Howdy Jesus. So if you haven't checked out the live episode, great Jonathan Coulton parody on that. Yeah, and that's nice of you to say about the actors. They're definitely like everybody, and it's a pro. So you would recognize stuff. You got Allison Becker from Parks and Rec, and Eliza Skinner, who's like a great stand-up comic. Keith Powell from 30 Rock is in there. Christella Alonso. From a gosh darn Cars movie. So yeah, it was just a bunch of fun, kind of cool people we knew from comedy and podcasting who did us a solid and came into work for much less than they normally get. So yeah,
the first episode they referenced the song, is it Sail Away?
Yeah, Come Jordan. Sail Away.
They change it to Come Ride a Boat. So good.
Come
so
ride
funny.
A boat. Yeah, I kind of wish there was a way to do the gag in the comic, but it didn't quite work. So we had to.
I mean, it's nice because there's enough difference, I feel like, between the graphic novel and the podcast that you can enjoy one and then enjoy the other. And the difference is, it's like the difference of like reading a book and really enjoying it and then watching the movie that's based on it and enjoying that too.
Thanks. I think that was definitely like a goal we had. Like we realized that, like, I mean, like you said, I think there's people who don't listen to podcasts and who don't listen to fiction podcasts. And there's also like some people who don't read comics, you know? So yeah, I think we wanted to make sure that like, if you loved the podcast, you could pick up the comic and still get some new stuff and some new scenes and, you know, some new like backstory for people. But if you had never, never, never heard the podcast and would never listen to a scripted podcast, you could still like pick up the book and like have a good time and not feel like you were, you know, watching a Marvel movie that you hadn't, you know, seen the previous three movies and you don't know what's going on. So yeah. Hopefully, there's something for everybody. Whether you liked the podcast or didn't listen to it, I think you can still like the book. So
yeah, the graphic novel also. I mean, you already spoke about the artist. They did a real bang up job. Shout out their names one more time, just so that.
Oh, that's Tony Cliff. The art's by Tony Cliff, and the colors are by Natalie Reese. They're nice. Definitely super talented and have a bunch of other cool work you should check out.
It made me feel a lot like I checked the podcast out first and then the graphic novel and I got what I was hoping for. It really reminded me of Saga a lot.
Oh, thanks, boy. High praise. Thank you.
Both in art and story tone, where the characters feel very much set. They very much act like people in the real world. Like people you could know, but they're set in a fantastic world where there's monsters and creatures and dystopian reality, you know, but they're all still talking about things that we all can relate to.
Thanks. Yeah, that is incredibly nice. I am a huge, huge, huge Saga fan, as everyone who reads comics should be.
As everyone who has eyes and reads a comic book is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's one of those things that like I think has pulled in people who are like, I don't read comics, but I love.
Yeah, definitely.
Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. It's a fantastic series. People have probably been yelling at you about it for years, but if you haven't checked it out, it is fucking great. And yeah, and something I love about that is that tone you were talking about, where we have these people in these fantastic situations. It's kind of a Star Wars meets Lord of the Rings, you know, road trip quest, but they just talk like normal people. They just talk like people you know, and you know, they seem familiar. This isn't like, oh, this isn't, you know, Gandalf the Grey, who is this, you know, fantastic character who I will never meet. But they kind of remind you of people you know in real life. So, I think that's certainly something I was thinking a lot about while making Bubble. It's like, you know, hopefully it doesn't seem like we were stealing the tone. But man, I like that tone. It's fantastic. Saga's so good.
We'll be right back. After this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so backing up to young Jordan.
Yes.
What was your introduction to ska?
So, I am 39 years old, born in 1982. So, you know, around 1993, 94, I started to be in junior high in Orange County, California. And I think around that time, you know, like punk stuff was starting to make its way, you know, onto radio and, you know, into malls and, you know, in my friends' Discmans. And so that was like you know, so that was the kind of the time of Green Day, Offspring, Nirvana, etc. And I think I liked all that stuff because it was like high energy and catchy. But because I was and am a very good boy, I think I did not like the punk elements of that stuff at first. You know, I didn't like that there was swears and, you know, people talking about disrespecting the police. That's no good. What would mom say? What would mom say if she heard this filth? So I think I was just a very timid kid, like a little religious. So I think that like I what I responded to was like, this is fun, this is high energy, this is catchy, but also I'm a little scared of this. It seems like maybe it's bad. And then, Bad Religion was there. You know, I think they're kind of like more famous in Southern California than they are all over the place, although they're, you know, very respected. But obviously, they were huge, huge, huge around that time. And so, you know, I was kind of like curious about that, but also a little scared. And I think, so I had this friend, Mike Nguyen, shout out to Mike Nguyen, great dude, don't know what he's up to now, nice guy. His older sister, who was like in college, would like drive us around. And she had like tapes of ska, like pre-ska boom. And it was a lot of like two-tony sounding stuff. It was like, you guys know Let's Go Bowling? Let's Go Bowling was in there. Dancehall Crashers, a lot of Dancehall Crashers. I know they're not really two-tone, but like, you know, that was a big one. So I was like, this, I like. This is high energy. This is peppy. This is fun. And they're not like saying anything that I think would upset my mom. Right. So I think I kind of got into the idea of ska because the early ska I was hearing was very friendly and fun. And so then I kind of started to dig around about what it was about. And there was a newspaper article in the Orange County Register in the calendar section, which I read every Sunday because, as I mentioned, I was a very good boy and just sat and read the paper with mother on Sundays. And I remember like seeing an article about what's this ska thing and cutting out all the pictures in the paper of the ska bands. And like going to the record store and trying to like find them because I like their vibe. I like that they wore like fun suits and suspenders. And then, you know, so that kind of started. I think the first ska album I had was Question the Answers, Mighty Mighty Bosstones, which is a pretty punk album, you know, and which is a pretty like intense album that has like social issue stuff on it. So like, you know, and has a lot of hardcore in it. Like that's when like Dickie was still screaming and like they had, you know, like fucking metal stuff. Anyway, so I got that and then a lot of comps. There was this one called OC Ska versus Punk, where it was like a guy with Liberty spikes and a guy like dressed as a rude boy, like boxing on the front. And that's what I think where I first heard Save Ferris, which was a very big band for me in high school. I think kind of from those comps and like Mail Order is Fun and Give 'Em the Boot and those kinds of things, I kind of started to piece together the bands that I liked. And then once I hit high school and people started having cars, I just kind of went whole hog and just wanted to go to shows every weekend. And I listened to the Ska Parade on KUCI, hosted by Tazy Phillips, the college radio show where a lot of those, you know, like ska bands got their first exposure. Kind of hear it from my house. And definitely, if you drove around UC Irvine, you could definitely hear it. So we did a lot of like driving around just so we could listen to the Ska Parade. And so then I think I was just like all about it. And I think I got more comfortable with, you know, punk and anti-authority and swears and stuff like that. So then I kind of folded in, you know.
You mentioned being kind of religious as a kid, but you weren't religious enough to fall in with like the Christian ska.
You're mistaken, my friend. I could sing various Five Iron Frenzy songs.
All right, there we go.
And they're great. And I think they have stayed great. And, I don't know if they've had any like bad takes recently that I should know about, but like, as far as like good music goes, like they were awesome and still are awesome. They were on the, I saw them on the Ska Against Racism tour, where they were like out there with a bunch of like secular bands. They were out there with like Mad Caddies and Less Than Jake. And I'm like, this is cool. Like, isn't this what the Christian dude should be doing, getting out there? Anyway, yeah. 500 Friends here, great.
So from what I understand, also the SoCal Ska Against Racism was like the biggest of the shows. Can you confirm that, Aaron?
I had not heard that.
I just remember seeing like the lineup for it, and it was like an insane amount of bands. Jordan, can you confirm that?
I can confirm that. Yes, it's a guy who was there in 1996 or whatever. Who do I remember seeing? Definitely the first time I've seen Less Than Jake, who like is also still great. I think I had seen the Mad Caddies. The Toasters were there. There was a bunch of like kind of two-tony bands. The Debonairs. I don't know if I remember too many of the others, but I'm sure. Bruce Lee Band. Bruce Lee Band was there. That was really cool to see. Ska Against Racism. And I bought that new comp they came out with. That was really cool that they made that.
Do you remember the very first ska show you ever saw?
I do, yes. So Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Bren Events Center at UCI.
Okay.
And I think they were the headliners, and I think the openers were, a young Dropkick Murphys, I think, opened that show with the original singer and the amazing Royal Crowns, who were like a Stray Cats kind of rockabilly band. But that was my first live ska band. And I think shortly after that, I saw the Supertones at church.
Nice.
The OC Superstones, the lesser of the hit Christian ska bands, in my opinion.
But huge in the Christian ska scene.
Very huge in the Christian ska scene. And then I think very, very soon after that, I saw Safe Ferris, Aquabats, Real Big Fish, Blink 182 opening that show.
I recall some Skank and Pickle shows where Blink, called Blink at the time, opened. And it was like one of the first Rancid shows, which when they were still playing clubs, it was like, I think Blink opened that too. Yeah.
They were kind of like the pop punk band you could kind of throw in. I feel like I saw them in the Ataris at a lot of ska shows. I feel like I saw the Ataris open for Dancehall Crashers a couple times.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Adam went for you on the Christian thing, I was going to say, like, you were a guest on a Christian podcast, Good Christian Fun, where you had a Five Iron Frenzy conversation.
We did, yeah. Good Christian Fun, by the way. Great podcast. Where they dissect a piece of Christian entertainment. It's always fun and funny. They're super hilarious. And yeah, I've been on the show a couple times, and I've always kind of insisted on doing Christian ska and punk things just because that was the like Christian media that was most important to me. So yeah, we did a Five Iron Frenzy episode, and we did an MXPX episode. Five Iron Frenzy holds up much better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Five Iron has a new album, and I think some of the members are no longer Christian, some are. And I feel like it broadens the scope of their what they're about a little bit more, and I think makes them a little bit more accessible to a larger audience. And I think it strengthens their message.
They've also maintained a progressive political point of view as well, and have tried to gel it with the Christian message as they see it, which is kind of puts them as a unique voice in the Christian landscape of 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always remember them having like a pretty nuanced approach to like songwriting. And they were like critical of parts of Christianity that they felt like needed criticism. And yeah, it was definitely not just like, praise him, pick it up, you know.
But I mean, that would be a hit, Jordan, if you wanted to start a Christian ska band. Yeah. You got a good chorus right there.
Can you guys send me that audio file? Can you guys snip that out and send that to
me? Yeah,
sure.
We'll Skype it to your inbox. Don't worry.
Yeah, thank you.
how would you compare, was there big differences between the Christian ska shows and the not Christian ska shows?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I want to say yes and no. I think that like the thing that young, timid me was responding to about, you know, ska was that like, this is a safe place to goof around. I can just go here and like goof around. And I think like the church shows really felt like that. It's like, let's drink a bunch of soda and wear our dad's hats. Like, you know, it was just like, we can just be goofballs. And I think that some of this kind of all ages ska shows felt like that. But then, you know, we did go up to the Showcase Theater in Ventura, which is a very rough venue to see shows. And I think by then I was getting a little bit more comfortable with like being around people who were drinking and like smelling marijuana and all these other things I think I was a little scared of in the beginning. So, yeah, I think that definitely there were a lot of like YMCA shows that I went to that felt just like, this is like summer camp and we're all running around and, you know, I can do the worm in the middle of the pit and everybody will think it's cool. But then, yeah, but I think then I got so into, you know, bands and going to shows that I think I branched out into places that were a little more like traditional rock and roll venues when I was comfortable. So
I see. Yeah. Yeah, it's strange for me because I grew up in a pretty religious home in a church. And I, when I was younger, I was sort of, you know, I had to go to Christian shows, but this was pre-Christian ska. So, but by the time Christian ska became a thing, I was out of that. So I never really experienced Christian ska. But I have experienced Christian shows. I could tell you about like seeing DC Talk and some of these bands.
Whoa, you saw the Talk? Hell yeah.
I saw the
cool.
I saw DC Talk, but they opened for Michael W. Smith and say they were like, we're the young, hip rapscallions and we're going to make people put their hands up in the air, unlike that old, unhip Michael W. Smith.
Yeah.
They had like super high color like shirts. It was, yeah.
That was kind of like the vibe of those like youth group shows about like, the grown-ups would flip if they knew what we were doing. Like, they still wanted to make you feel a little bit bad. Like, we're going to watch all the Back to the Future movies and, you know, eat red vines. And we're going to use them for straws in our sodas. Like, this kind of, like, very, like, mild, you know, this very mild tood that they like to put on. That, I think that's such a funny part of that, like, Christian pop culture zone.
The only Christian ska band I ever saw, though, was Fiverr and Frenzy, and that's because they played ska against racism.
Yeah.
And that was a totally different vibe. Then I imagine then what would have been the Christian, which they like to be in that, you know, that scene pretty frequently. You know, the normal ska scene, not exclusively the Christian scene, but although they would do that too.
Yeah, I think that is like that is just a testament to testament. That's fun. a testament to like how cool they were slash are is that like it seems like one of their values is like, okay, well, you can play at a church and, you know, pretty literally preach to the choir, but you know, if you have a message you want to get out, like get out there with secular bands and talk to secular kids and do something that is a good, an objectively good cause, like ska against racism. Go out there and be against racism. So it's really cool. I think that like I haven't like totally kept up with them, but like I would like to think that like they kind of transcend what you think a Christian ska band would be.
Definitely, they definitely do.
So you moved to Santa Cruz for college?
I did, yeah.
So when was that?
That was in, so I graduated in 2000. So yeah, I think I was in Santa Cruz from 2000 to 2004. And I was, and that was around the time when like, I was really starting to get shit for liking ska. but I leaned in a little bit and there was a dude I knew named Brian Heater. Shout out to Brian Heater if he's listening, who did a ska show on the local college radio station, and I did it with him for a quarter where I was like his little co-host. So yeah, we played ska records on the Special Brew Saturdays at 3, I believe we were on. So
nice.
So was that your introduction into doing radio type stuff?
Yeah, kind of. So I got into radio via my podcast partner Jesse Thorne, who runs MaximumFun.org, and he is my co-host on the Jordan Jesse Go Aimless Chat podcast. And so he was a year ahead of me and was already like doing, you know, 5 a.m. shows on the college radio station. And he and I was in his improv group. Yeah, that's right. I like ska and improv. I'm an enigma. Who's this guy? I can't figure him out. So I was in his improv group. He brought me along to the radio station to do like little bits that I'm sure were not funny at all. But I think we thought they were. So yeah, so I kind of met him and Brian, who did the special brew, and I think we were like a little radio crew. So yeah, that was my introduction to radio, and I guess that kind of like turned into podcasting. I think that little college radio show that Jesse and I did kind of just turned into our podcast, which we still do once a week. So
yeah. What's Jesse's take on ska and slash your ska interest?
Oh, I think he thinks it is dumb. So, I think he is like a hip hop and soul music fan, and I think that sure. like he was very annoyed by the ska revival when it was, because we're about the same age. So I think he was like, I think he thought it was pretty dumb. So yeah, and I think I like it, kind of early episodes of our show are a lot of it is like giving me shit for liking ska, and I kind of like even put the brakes on it at a certain point. I had to say like, hey man, can we like not do this anymore? So I think obviously when we look back, it's like the 90s had bigger problems than the ska revival, you know? So I think I think people kind of look back on it fondly now, but it was definitely like an early source of like, you know, lovingly giving me shit in the beginning of our relationship.
Sure, yeah.
I'd wager if you put on Hepcat or the Frighteners for him,
yeah,
he'd be into that. I mean, if he likes soul and hip hop, like I feel like those bands kind of like fit nicely into that like a Venn diagram of things that you like.
Yeah, and I think you have the Slackers, you have the late great Go Jimmy Go, and you have all those other bands that kind of folded in, you know, kind of soul and R&B and reggae and jazz, and like, yeah, and it's so interesting, and I'm sure you guys, this is something you guys feel too, but I think, you know, when ska became the punchline, people just thought of it as like dudes in Hawaiian shirts singing songs about spam, you know? And I think that like, we were like, hey, but there's all this other stuff. There's the soul and R&B stuff. There's the punk stuff. There's the hardcore stuff. And we were like, no, it's just guys in Hawaiian shirts playing songs about spam and it's lame, you know?
Yeah, I would say that was a huge, huge premise of my book was just to say, I get it. I get that you want to make fun of, Real Big Fish and people who like that, but that's not the entirety of the genre. And like, let's just try to broaden our sense of what the genre is, because it gets tiring to listen to people make fun of in an entire genre based off of five bands.
Yeah, for sure.
Like learn a little bit more about the genre if you're going to like make fun of it. It's just, I don't know in any other genre where five bands represents the entirety of the bad jokes that you make about it.
Yeah, I'm sure if people like have a bad taste about a genre, like they're thinking of the version of it that annoys them the most. I don't know, and maybe we're doing it with nu metal and Limp Bizkit, but like, I even think that there are like intense ska haters who loop in like Sugar Ray and Smash Mouth, who think that like that is ska and that's like what we were into, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe in hindsight, some of those Smash Mouth songs hold up pretty well. But, you know, I think that, yeah, to a lot of people, it was just this kind of like, yeah, just these kind of goofballs, you know, taking Jamaican music and making it kind of goofy and suburban. So, so I think that was something that, like, something that as ska fans, I think we always feel a little bit like we've got a pebble in our shoe about.
Sure, yeah.
We'll be right back after this.
After college, you moved back to Southern California, and did you go right into doing like comedy and writing for TV and working in this industry?
Yeah, so I started out, so I moved to LA after I graduated from college, and I then I started doing like PA jobs, which is like the lowest showbiz job you can have. It's like copy getter, script copier, you know, take my Beamer to the car wash, bring me bagels, that kind of thing. So I was doing those jobs, you know, in the mornings, and then at night I was like taking improv classes and doing improv at like UCB and the late great IO and places like that. So yeah, I was kind of starting to do comedy and kind of figure out what parts of comedy that I liked while I was just kind of learning about the, you know, day-to-day production showbiz side of it, buying clothes for Fran Drescher's dog. Something I actually did.
What's lower though, PA or working in the mailroom?
Oh, good question. I mean, I never worked in the mailroom. I think that the mailroom probably has some sort of, has maybe a dignity that PA does not have.
Okay.
Because you don't have to do anything. You have to work with mail. And I think with PA, it's like, all right, you know,
anything they want.
Photocopy these scripts, but also, you know, my kid's soccer ball is deflated. You have to go get them a new soccer ball before practice. So stuff like that. So yeah, I think there's probably a dignity to working in the mailroom, and maybe it might be a union job. I don't know. But I bet, you know, harder to get noticed in the mailroom, harder to, you know, get out there and learn about writing or producing or whatever it is you really want to do. So
sure.
There's pros and cons to each.
So the last, I would say from about 2010, you know, for about a decade, and it picking up steam, suddenly we're seeing ska jokes in TV shows.
Yeah.
You're in that world. What's going on? Is it all these like ex-ska people, or is it like just full-on ska haters that are inserting all these jokes in these shows? Do you have any insight for us as a person in this industry?
That's an interesting question. Can you cite a couple? I can think of maybe one or two off the top of my head, but can you, to you, what are the like high profile ska jokes that have appeared in media?
There's the Brooklyn 99 one with Andy Samberg.
Oh yeah, sure.
There's the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend one, which is really specific, right?
I don't remember that. I think they reference Impossibles in that one, right?
And the hippos, I think. Yeah.
And the hippos? Whoa, those are deep cuts. Well, that's got to be from a ska fan, right? Because
definitely.
But here's, I'm gonna throw in a brand new one. So What We Do in the Shadows, season one. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where a character is turned into a vampire, and then they're at a party, and there's a ska band playing, and then she kills the lead singer of the ska band, right? And so I Googled it right after I watched it. I'm like, who's that band? I was just curious. And I found an interview with like someone, a producer or somebody. And they're like, yeah, we all hate ska. And we were like, who's the audience going to be okay with having this character kill somebody? Oh, a singer of a ska band. No one's going to care about that.
So I would guess that you've got, I think you probably have both going on, because, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, there's a huge overlap between ska and improv comedy. So I think that like, if you were like a high energy goofball, you are kind of prone to liking ska and then therefore prone to maybe like getting into comedy. So I think there probably are a lot of people writing for, you know, your Crazy Ex-Girlfriends and your Brooklyn Nine-Nines who were ska kids and maybe like, you know, want to put in some loving references. But then I think you are probably right. I think there's probably just as many like, you know, haters who want to take a dig. So yeah, it's tough. I think you got to just kind of judge it reference by reference. Did you guys see that movie, The Mitchells versus the Machines?
Yes.
There's a little joke in that where the character is running through identities that she's going to have when she goes to college. And there's a little flash where she's got on a ska outfit.
Yep.
I'm actually friendly with the director of that. And he's a fan. That's a loving joke.
Oh, okay. Nice.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it really is. Terrific movie. So yeah, I think Yeah, I think a lot of media is being made by, you know, people who were kids in the 90s. So I think it's going to, like, creep in there.
Sure, yeah. So you, At Midnight, was that, like, was that your first kind of a bigger break, I guess you could say?
Yes, I was a writer on At Midnight on Comedy Central, and I had been working in, like, deep, deep cable. I worked for years on a show called Fuel TV. This is in, like, the last gasp of cable when, like, you had 600 channels. This was a, like, action sports channel, and I did their, like, goofy comedy in the field pieces. So I did that for years, but that was a, like, non-union job on a TV network that nobody watched. And I did a lot of, like, you know, web series type jobs. But At Midnight was my first, like, Writers Guild, you know, job on a show that people I knew actually watched. So yeah, that was a big deal for me and a really fun gig. But yeah, that was definitely, like, it was not my first, like, writing gig, but it felt like the biggest deal.
Yeah. And you got to appear on it like a half dozen times as well as a contestant.
Yeah, that's a fun part about writing for At Midnight is that when somebody doesn't show up, they throw in a writer. So yes, I did get to be on At Midnight a couple of times based on somebody not showing up. Yeah, and it was always really fun. It's just a blast. That show was great. I wonder. I wish there was more like panel show type comedy shows on the air. That's such a fun format. I would love. Would love for that to be a an ongoing thing that happened, but yeah, there hasn't really been anything like it since. Not that I know of.
Yeah, I saw a video. I assume you made it, or somebody who represents you made it, where it was like a super cut of your scenes and your good answers, and then it's like, book me, and here's my.
I think that might be my reel. Yes, maybe that is my reel. It has my manager's contact on there that might be out of date. Yeah, you can watch that on my website, jordanmorris.net.
Was Scott coming up as a topic or joke? I mean, I used to watch that show. I just can't remember any off the top of my head.
You could always get a laugh making a joke about Smash Mouth.
Sure, yeah.
You could always, yeah. So I think the word Hoobastank is just funny. So I think
they started as a ska band.
I mean, it's such a ska bandy name, isn't it?
Oh, because it used to be Hoobastank.
No way.
Yeah. It wasn't Hooba. It was Hooboo at first.
So wait, do they have an album? Can I go and find the Hoobastank?
100%.
No way.
It's called They Don't Make Basketball Shorts Like They Used To.
I love that.
I know this because Link 80 and Homegrown played with them at the Ventura Theater.
No way. Wow. Homegrown.
They had a horn section and a bass player that would wear like this dumb, like kind of like pointy cowboy hat thing. And like shants, you know, the like big baggy short pants.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they made that guy go to a stylist or if they just got a new bass player, but they had a horn section and they kicked the horn section out. And then the next thing you know, they put out the Reason song and changed the U to an A. And
the rest is music history.
Yeah.
Did you ever talk to the band about the conversation that they had about the name change?
That would be great to find out about.
That would be like, we need a behind the music special on the name change.
On Hoobastank.
I would love it if, like, Hoobastank was like, we're bringing back the horns. Ska nostalgia is here. We're leaning into it. Hoobastank is back.
If ska is truly back, that's how we'll know.
Yeah.
If we get Hoobastank.
Mm-hmm. That'll be, yes, we'll all know. Like, yes, now the fourth wave is here. The fourth wave is now here.
Before we were recording, you were talking about We Are the Union, who sounds like you're familiar with already.
Yeah, so I, you know, I definitely like had a moment. I think I mentioned it earlier where I was like, hey, I think I would like to stop dicking on ska music for a second, and I kind of like forgot about it a little bit. But one of my pandemic things I picked up was running. Like I, you know, because that's one of the only things you can do. I went up there and like ran. And part of the thing that got me through it is I love making playlists. I love making playlists that I can run to. And I'm like, you know, this is a private thing for me. It's just to pump me up. I don't need to show this to anybody. I can put just what my heart wants on this. And Yeah, it was a lot of like Winston Jake, Slow Gherkin, Op Ivy, and like I think the algorithm in its infinite wisdom just is like, we know who you are now. And then I started getting Omnigon and We Are the Union and Abracadabra and kind of all these great new bands. So like, yeah, it's fun kind of like getting into these bands that are awesome ska bands that I didn't know were around.
Man, I can't run to ska.
Oh yeah?
Because I feel like forced to run to the beat.
Yeah.
And then I just feel like I'm running way too fast. I'd listen to podcasts if I'm going running. How far are you running when you go out running?
I do an app called Couch to 5K. So it's like 40 minutes and you do like 3 miles.
Okay, cool. And then it starts you off with like intervals, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah. You do like a walk, run. And then it builds you up to just running. So yeah.
Nice.
New Bruce Lee band's got a lot of good running tracks. Anyway.
Let's talk about Mike Park for a second.
Sure.
He listens to... He's a regular listener to this podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
And he called me yesterday and he was like, I'm really disappointed that every single guest doesn't talk about me. I want every single guest to talk about me. So you need to start asking every guest what they think of me. So
fucking legend. I mean, the new Bruce Lee band stuff is good. As I mentioned, there's a song called Miss Me. Everybody check out the song MS period me by Bruce Lee band. It fucking rules. The Chinkies, Searching for a Brighter Future. That's like one of the best ska albums.
Absolutely.
So Mike Park's great. He's out there. He's still doing it. I don't know. Mike Park is great. No complaints about Mike.
There you go, Mike.
I noticed in the photo, I don't know if it was a press photo or something, but you had a pair of shirt on. So are you a fan of Bad Operation then?
Yeah, Bad Operation is great. That is the kind of two-tony ska band that has some members of Pairs in it. Bad Operation is awesome. I'd love to, they're another like band who I'm like, the algorithm taught me that they exist, and I like can't wait till their shows again to see. All those bands.
So it's interesting. So it was the pandemic was kind of brought you back to ska. Then it was more just from having. Is it more from having the time or just sort of the like, I don't know, wanting something that you like to be part of your life that, you know, doesn't really matter what anyone thinks of it sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above, definitely. I think that is all true. And I think that like a lot of reason that people like are talking about like ska kind of being back is because like, you know, the world's just a fucking bummer and we're all kind of trying to remember stuff that felt good and stuff that made us happy and times when like we felt like we were connected. Connection, I mean, was such a big part of that. You just get together in this room with a bunch of other dorks and you dance around, you know, like it was such a like, I don't know, it was such a kind of a wonderful community kind of thing to do was to go to those shows. So I think we're all like looking back at that and going, God, that was fucking fun. I know we all kind of like, we all were a little embarrassed of it at a certain point, but like, man, it was fun. And to have fun like that again, I think it's just like something that I think I was feeling and a lot of other people were feeling. And yeah, just this kind of thing about like life's short, like what you like, you know? And I think it's like, hey, you know, whatever. People get in my car and a Less Than Jake song starts playing. Like, I don't know. Maybe they'll tease me for a little bit, but like, they rule. I know they rule. This pumps me up. This makes me feel good. Like, though the world is very bad sometimes. Like, yeah, I don't know. So I think I've really been kind of reevaluating lately. And like, yeah, just like, it's been just kind of a wonderful, like, old friend to have with me. And and the fact that it kind of gets me out there to run and do something that's like good for me is awesome. And I think that's like the music is such a huge part of that, and like ska is a big part of that. So yeah, I don't know. It's just it's kind of like it's kind of come back into my life in a really nice way.
Thank you so much for listening to In Defense of Ska. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe to the show wherever you normally download podcasts. If you haven't already, grab a copy of my book, In Defense of Ska, available at clashbooks.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. It's at In Defense of Ska. You can also sign up for my newsletter at aaroncarnes.substack.com. You will get the podcast sent directly to your inbox every Wednesday. In Defense of Ska would not be possible without the great team that tirelessly works on it every week. So you should go check out their other projects as well. Co-host Adam Davis has a great band called Omnigon. Give them a follow on Instagram. It's simply @Omnigon. And our editor, Chris Reeves, has a phenomenal record label and podcast called Ska Punk International. For more information, go to skapunkinternational.com. And on that note, we leave you by saying, ska now more than ever. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.